On July 5th, 1687, Isaac Newton published his book, Principia. And in that book, he described the laws of motion, mechanics, physics, and the law of gravitation. Even to this day, it's still one of the most important and foundational books in all of human history. Now, as children, we may have learned that Newton discovered gravity. That's what I was taught. I can remember the picture in my science book. He's sitting on a chair in a park, like a park bench, and an apple falls from the tree. And he discovers gravity. Like nobody knew that it existed before. Of course it existed before Newton. In fact, many scientists had tried to describe gravity and what it was, what it meant, why it acted. Aristotle, long before Newton, said that objects rose or fell depending upon their composition of the four basic elements of the universe: earth, air, water, and fire. Yet even before Aristotle, before humanity, before the dinosaurs, before the beginning of time, really gravity existed. It always existed. It was just Newton who put it in an equation and said, here it is. The beautiful part of Newton's law of gravity is that it pointed towards some unseen things in our solar system, things that we had not yet discovered. In the 19th century, some scientists noticed that the planet Uranus, its orbit, did not follow precisely Newton's law of gravity. And because Newton's law of gravity had been kind of confirmed time and time again, they realized that it wasn't the equation that was wrong, but there was something else out there in the solar system of which they were unaware that was affecting the orbit of the planet Uranus. So they worked backwards. They worked the calculations backwards, and they uncovered, or they theorized that at this specific point in the solar system, there is a given body that has a certain mass that we haven't yet seen. And on the very night that those calculations were completed, astronomers trained their telescopes on that point, and there they discovered the planet Neptune. That's fascinating. Well, at least I think it is. I think it's fascinating. The joy of discovery, discovering those things that we have yet to see. So what innate, undiscovered gifts, what things have we not yet discovered about our very selves? Actually, we can take that on many different levels. What have we not yet discovered about ourselves? What have we not yet discovered about our own congregation? This year, we will continue to re-examine ourselves and our visioning process. We've already, this past year, articulated our values. We've drafted a covenant that reflects those values. We've listed some things that our values compel us to do within our walls and beyond. And this year, we are going to continue with our mission and visioning process, meaning we will come up with possibly a new mission statement and possibly a vision or vision statements. And maybe in this process, we'll be in a process of re-examination. We might find some hidden things about ourselves that we didn't yet know. In this morning's story, the Tower of Babel from the Old Testament, I see a community that's cooperating with one another. They're working together. They're wishing to be one community. They say, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we shall be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. Yet God, seeing this, says, look, they are one people, and they all have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so that they will not understand one another's speech. That's directly from the book of Genesis, chapter 11. So God confounds them by causing them to speak in strange languages so that they can no longer communicate with one another. And what do the people do? They kind of give up, and they spread throughout the land, throughout the world. Why would God do this? I have to scratch my head. Why would God do that to his people? Why would he frustrate them so? The standard argument is that the people were getting too big for their britches, and they wanted to build a tower to the heavens because they could be like God. They were as good as God. But that's not what's in the text. That's not in the text. Those are people who came up with those ideas. But God didn't seem to want them to build that tower. He seems to be afraid of them or jealous of them in some way. You use here many stories like this, and there are many stories like this in the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible. Many stories that leave us scratching our heads. Many stories where we come away thinking that God is nothing more than a jealous, angry, capricious God. We're not the only ones who've felt this way. Trust me. Orthodox Christianity was decided upon at the Council of Nicaea in the year 325. But before that, there were many groups of Christians wandering around trying to understand and square Jesus' message of you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your strength, and your mind. That was Jesus' message. With the God that they saw in the Old Testament. There were many groups trying to square those two narratives. Some of these Christian groups were called Gnostics, and that's an umbrella term for many different groups. But many of the Gnostics felt that the God described in the Old Testament couldn't possibly be the same God that Jesus was talking about. Couldn't be the same. They believed that there was a God that said, let there be light in the Old Testament. But that God created a very imperfect world, rife with violence, suffering, imperfection. And the Gnostics believed that that was a God, but not the God, and that Jesus came down from the heavens to provide a correction of sorts, to say, your telescope needs to be trained over here. That's not the real God. There's another God yet that you don't know about. And Jesus provided the knowledge, the gnosis to those groups, pointing the direction to the real God. I think this is fascinating stuff. I think it's fascinating. So, that's what the Gnostics believe, okay? So many of us see the Tower of Babel as a story about a myth of how to explain the diversity on the earth, diversity of people and diversity of language. And other cultures have similar stories about tower building. Other cultures have similar stories about how languages developed. Other cultures had different stories about floods and how creation occurred. There's many different stories. In the story in the New Testament or the Old Testament, God wasn't looking to create diversity in that example. God is kind of afraid and jealous, threatened by his people. And he scatters them. Diversity is kind of like an afterthought. It's an accident. But after God gives them different languages. What happens? Do the people work together or try to communicate with one another, try to build and rebuild their tower? No, they scatter. And that leads me to believe, like, what kind of love held their community together? I mean, imagine if you woke up tomorrow speaking a different language than your partner, than your children, than your best friends, the people in this room. Would you say, all right, I'm out of here? I don't think so. I think you would try very hard to find a way to communicate with your loved ones, to find a way to communicate, to work together, to build and rebuild what you were planning to do with your life. Some people here at Human might think that we sometimes here speak different languages with one another, and it can cause conflict. Sometimes people might think that there are people here who think that others here are angry, jealous, and capricious gods frustrating our efforts in our community. And it can be disheartening to think that. Yet, rather than communicate with one another, rather than work hard together with one another to build and rebuild, maybe they find it, they have to scatter, or they find it easier to scatter and to leave. And if we're unwilling to work through those things, if we're unwilling to work together, what might that say about the love of our community? Might this be our myth, the story that we tell ourselves about ourselves? Could we tell ourselves a different story? Dietrich Bonhoeffer, theologian who was murdered by the Nazis as a martyr, wrote, "Only that fellowship which faces disillusionment, with all its unhappy and ugly aspects, begins to be what it should be in God's sight, begins to grasp in faith the promise that has been given to it. The sooner this shock of disillusionment comes to an individual and to a community, the better for both." Dietrich Bonhoeffer. The shock of disillusionment is difficult, especially when in that disillusionment we see some unsavory and not so nice things about ourselves. Especially when we were living under the illusion that we were already in the promised land, the land of milk and honey. It can be difficult. Last week we had a beautiful ribbon cutting ceremony downstairs to celebrate the reconstruction, the rebuilding of our basement and fellowship hall. And it looks beautiful down there. And many people, and others outside our community, worked together very hard. It took 6-7 months to put that back together. But will it always be beautiful down there? I can tell you right now, there's kids putting their dirty hands on the walls. And they're going to be tracking mud through those beautiful white carpets that they had down there. It's going to be dirty. It's going to be muddy. We'd be living under an illusion if it's always going to be that nice down there. After the ceremony last week, I told somebody, because we've had so many floods down there, and we've done a lot of work this year, I told somebody last week after the ceremony, if it floods again down there, I'm just going to get in my car and I'm going to drive away. I will be off to see the wizard. Because I've mopped up 3 inches of water down there into a little drain that's over in the corner of the building over here. I've mopped up that, and so have many others. And I worked with a group to regrade the whole back of Fellowship Hall back there in an effort to try to keep water off that patio back there. And I don't want to be disillusioned yet again if it floods down there. I say that I'll take off, that I'll be off to see the wizard, but I know in my heart that I wouldn't do that. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. But I have faith that behind the disillusionment, behind and beyond the disillusionment, is the promise that has been given to this congregation. That there are hidden and unseen gifts that we have not yet discovered amongst ourselves, dormant, waiting to be awakened by our work together. I've already seen some evidence of it already. Just last Saturday, we had a training for all of our teachers who are teaching the children now. There were many people who've never taught before. And there were many people who haven't taught in years who step forward and say, yeah, I'm willing to serve. And I am so grateful that they did that and for the positive vibe that they've been giving off almost all summer. But I wonder if they realize what they're getting into. I wonder if they realize that they might be the ones most affected by their own service. I didn't know how I would be affected when I first began teaching religious education 20 years ago in my home congregation. But after years and years of that, and after 6 years of being the youth group advisor, that pushed me over the edge. And I, after that experience, that was when I began to pursue Unitarian Universalist ministry, something I was never interested in prior to that. A couple weeks ago at North Fulton Community Charities, we unloaded a whole truck full of supplies, school supplies, and backpacks. And we assembled these supplies into backpacks, and these were to be given to children who can't afford to have backpacks and school supplies. They were given out a couple weeks ago. But in the midst of our work, we had a break, and I was sitting next to Carla Kapeskas, and she started to tell me a story. She told me a story about a couple days earlier, she had had some friends over at her house, and she was telling her friends about an interfaith service project that we had in this sanctuary a couple days earlier than that. We had an interfaith service project for El Refugio, okay? So Carla was explaining this to her friends when she was rudely interrupted by her daughter, Vika. Vika took over the story and began to tell the story to Carla's friends. That we had over 100 people here in the human sanctuary, people of all ages, colors, ethnicities, religions. We had Muslims, Jews, Christians, Unitarian Universalists, all in here, working together side by side, assembling backpacks for people who are visiting their loved ones at the Stewart Detention Center in Lumpkin, Georgia. They have to drive for hours and hours just to visit their loved ones. Well, we made them backpacks. And she further explained that, you know, not only did we do this for the El Refugio guests, the people who had to travel so far to see their loved ones, but we also did this so that we could have relationships with all the other people in our community who don't necessarily look like us. And we also did this because this is how we live our Unitarian Universalist principles. Wow. I imagine that must have been a beautiful and miraculous interruption that Carla, I'm sure, welcomed. A parent hearing that, and hearing that being related to a third party, that's what it's all about, people. It really is. Just 2 years ago, Vika is someone who you wouldn't hear a word from. That's a young woman who's finding her voice. She really is. And it's in a Unitarian Universalist voice. And it's a beautiful, miraculous Unitarian Universalist voice. These are just a couple examples of the hidden and unseen gifts that are now being discovered here under this roof. And I believe that these gifts are just now dawning on a horizon. I totally believe that. And in this congregation, despite the disillusionment, by working together, I have faith. I am willing to trust in those elements that I have yet to see. And with that, I will look for the true shape of ourselves and of this congregation.